Welcome to the She Read, She Said podcast,
where we read and discuss books about women written by women.
We're your hosts, Megan
and Kate, so sit back,
settle in,
and let the pages come to life.
Well, hello there.
Welcome.
Welcome. I feel like I want to say welcome back because we're back.
Welcome home.
We've arrived back in the closet, which we usually conduct our business here on this podcast. We are back in the United States, having just concluded our trip to the UK and Ireland.
And for those of you who don't know, the reason we've been away is because we, at the end of April, held our Scotland fantasy tour. Woo-hoo! Which, if you didn't listen to our last episode, just know that it rocked my socks.
As it did mine as well.
It changed my life. I am a different person. I'm a better person. Mm-hmm. And I am just so excited. And I know we are both so excited to just go do it again in October. We have two dates, October 20th through the 26th, and then October 27th through November 2nd. So that second tour, it's Halloween.
Yes.
Spooky season in Scotland. In Edinburgh, in the Highlands. Are you kidding me?
It's gonna be a good time.
So if that is something you would like to be a part of, or if you would like to learn more about, you can check the link in our show notes. We have the full itinerary, day by day, what we're doing, what the tour is about, because our tour is a lot more than just seeing Scotland. We have really focused on connection and making this just such an experience that will, I think, surprise a lot of people how heart-centered it truly is and just how much adventure and love and, I think, very real magic that comes from this tour.
And not to mention, this is a bookish tour as well. So this is for all of you bookish ladies out there to come together and really tap into everything that Kate just mentioned, while also bringing your love of fantasy, romance, romanticy, all of the things that we all tend to love and love discussing, that we're going to bring you together with nine other women. There's 10 spots total in each tour to just really like bond over your passions and what you love to read and dive into, plus all of the other stuff that comes with this tour. Like Kate said, it's truly, truly magical. And it's really amazing actually coming back home to really see the difference. And like you said, like I feel like a different person as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to come back to the spot where we started after that journey. And man, like we said in our last episode, we just really fell in love with our group and those incredible women, and we cannot wait to do this again.
Yeah, so like I said, make sure to go check out the link in our show notes. It's just shereadshesaid.com. And also check us out on Instagram, because I have been posting some pictures, some videos of our April tour. So if you kind of want to see some live footage, you can check that out over there. But now let's get into it, because we read a book, and today we are going to be diving into God Killer by Hannah Kaner.
We're jumping back into fantasy, which feels appropriate because we just came from our Scotland fantasy tour.
Yeah.
As always, we'll just kind of dive into our spoiler-free territory before actually discussing the book. Mm-hmm. So who is this book for?
I think this book is for anyone who is looking for a unique, diverse, multiple POV fantasy that I think also has more of a, I would call it maybe like a modern classic writing style.
Absolutely.
Just when it comes to like sentence structure. Mm-hmm. It is a journey fantasy. And with that, it very much is about the journey. It is.
Because there's a journey.
Because
our characters are on it.
And I know journey fantasies aren't for everyone, so I just do want to put that out there, that it is a journey fantasy. And I would say that it is not a fast-paced journey story.
No.
Up until the end.
Despite it being a short book, my book was 288 pages in terms of story content. Like you said, it really does feel a little bit more akin to some of the more like classical fantasy in terms of style, pacing, all of that.
Yes, definitely. And when it comes to the fantasy, the magic system is very unique. I think it's a very cool kind of like pagan magic system with gods that are brought to life essentially by human love and desire.
Yeah.
So very cool, unique magic. And I do really want to highlight, this is a very diverse fantasy. It has great disability representation, both in the characters themselves and also how their disabilities affect their lives in big and little ways, and really getting into the details. And I won't give any spoilers away about which characters deal with this. And it also has lots of queer representation, and we have two POC protagonists. Mm-hmm. So all across the board, there's a lot of really wonderful representation and diversity.
Absolutely.
So yeah, if that description appeals to you, then go pick up the book and come back and sit down with us once you've journeyed through 288 pages.
Because again, it is a journey. I really do think that that is an important thing to note, because journey stories tend to have a very specific feel to them sometimes, especially yes. in like a fantasy type setting. So this is definitely one of those.
I wanted to be very clear about that, because I will say I do think that there's a blurb on the back of my book that I think the word explosive is used. Kind of like, this is an explosive story, that I think I was expecting something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So I really want to make sure everyone's expectations of what the story is are actually aligned, because I wouldn't describe the majority of the book as explosive, action-packed, or anything like that.
It has its moments, obviously, has its moments here and there, and it kicks off
really strong.
Really, really strong, where you're like, oh yeah, okay, maybe that adjective would apply to this. But then we go on a journey, mm-hmm. and we're on that journey for the duration.
Yeah.
So yeah, Kate was, I don't want to say upset about that, but you did not like the discrepancy from the back of the book.
I just don't like being lied to.
Fair enough.
And we'll get into it. Just trying to stay spoiler free.
So yeah, like Kate said, if you would like to join us in this discussion, knowing what we're talking about, go read the book and come back here. But if you don't care, or you've already read it, let's get into it.
Let's go. Let's journey. So I think, always going off of who is this book for, Megan,
yes,
was this book for you?
You know, I feel like I have kind of a complicated relationship with this book, because I really want to say that I liked it, because I really did like it in pieces and parts and certain aspects of the book.
And ideas.
But there were aspects for me that it just didn't quite check the boxes that I really like in a book. Mm-hmm. I'm someone that I don't mind a journey story. I don't mind the fantasy road trip. I don't mind a slower paced type of book. I don't always need there to be like big plot things in books. I'm okay to sit with characters if I'm interested in them. So I was okay that it was a little slower for the most part, kicking off the book, like we mentioned with the prologue. I was so entrenched in the story.
Oh, I was so moved by the prologue.
It was amazing. Like, the writing really brought you in. And I have so many notes after the prologue and the first chapter of like, oh my God, I already love this book. I'm gripped. Like, that was rough, because it's such an emotional opening to really be in the point of view of one of our main characters and see what she went through. And it's like the little details with her mother telling the children to breathe in the smoke to spare them the pain, like all these little horrendous things immediately, as well as an introduction to the gods. So from the beginning, I'm like, oh, this is a book for me. And then as we kind of went along, I didn't feel as strongly about that, but I did like the book. What about you? Where do you kind of sit with this? And we'll get into kind of more of the reasons, but just initial feelings.
I think, like you, I'm on my Facebook account going to my relationship status saying it's complicated.
Yeah.
Because like you, starting off, it was such a beautiful prologue. And just from the first sentence, when it says like her father had fallen in love with a god of the sea.
Yeah.
It's like there was just such a classical element to the writing in the prologue that it was so beautiful. And I went through all of the emotions in the prologue of, oh shit, her family is being sacrificed right now. Like, you're really feeling it. She's a child. I definitely wanted to barf when her father is amputating her leg. And I wanted to cry when she tells them, like, I'm going to save you. And her father is talking to Ocitizen, the ocean god, saying, like, my lover, my friend, you owe me this. Mm-hmm. And ending on, like, the half sentence of, and he threw her into the sea.
Yeah.
I was like, this is just so gorgeous and beautiful. I was so hooked. And so starting off so strong, I was like primed and ready. And I think for me, it was just a bit of a slow start. And we can get into some of this stuff more. I think my little hangups with kind of like not loving it more was the pacing. And you know what? Before I go on my train, let's just get into it.
Are we just going to do it?
Let's just do it, because I kind of have like a list of things.
It's another list day.
I will start with, sorry, this is complete chaos, but I will start with things I liked.
Okay.
Things that just gripped me. So prologue, mm-hmm. we're in the prologue. So beautiful, so lyrical, almost like the Odyssey, like that kind of thing. That was so strong. Like you said, the world, the magic, the idea that gods are created by humans. I said it's very kind of like pagan feeling and that like the gods are kind of animalistic mm-hmm. and they're made of twigs and fire and water at times.
I mean, I could honestly talk a whole lot about just the structure of how she's created the world with the gods alone.
Mm-hmm.
Just the interdependency of humans and gods on each other and that kind of pull, that emotional dependency that they have. I agree that I think that was actually one of the strongest pieces of the book.
Yeah. So that was really strong. Like I said in the beginning, the diversity representation, that was really mm-hmm. phenomenal. I think especially specifically the disability representation,
yeah.
because that's something she gets into more. This isn't a world where really the patriarchy exists. I mean, everybody is gay.
Yeah.
So there's things like in terms of being with female characters or people of color or a lot of our queer characters, it's great to have the representation, mm-hmm. but we're not so much getting into the detail of it, which is completely fine. That's amazing and great. It's nice to be in stories where representation is there and it's not because everyone is being oppressed.
Yeah.
Where with the disability, she really got into like the mechanisms with her prosthesis and the wheelchair and stuff like that. And just how that affected fighting or having that be present in a love scene. I thought that that was mm-hmm. all really, really well done and really beautiful. And it's so important to have that. So I think for me, I am going to say on a high level, the book was for me. I really loved the ideas. Like I said, the world, the magic, the gods, all of that. But on kind of like just the more practical storytelling level, it personally wasn't for me. And it's not to say that I didn't enjoy like a lot of chunks of the book and have, you know, just enjoyable threads throughout. I just struggled with the pacing. I feel like we can get into it more, but some of the characterization
mm-hmm.
for characters wasn't quite there. Some relationship stuff. I think there were a handful of things that, from just a world building perspective, contradicted each other or didn't make sense or just kind of like little things here and there, like nothing that was huge, but there were just enough things like that, that because it was a slower book, I really wanted really strong characterization, really getting into the characters' emotions, all of the other pieces that make a story come to life, I think just weren't there for what I personally prefer.
Yeah, I definitely agree with a lot of that. I think something that I struggled with a little bit, again, I loved so many aspects of this book, but the one that my mind kind of kept coming back to is, especially because it was a short book,
mm-hmm.
the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, I wanted a lot of those aspects to feel more earned. So mm-hmm. some things like the romance in it, I wanted to see more of a progression with that. I wanted that to, I don't know, maybe develop a little bit more. Even some of the stuff with Kissin and Inara. I think I just wanted more things to be there in terms of really seeing how these people relate to each other, how trust is built, because all of that happened really quickly. Again, this is 288 pages.
Yeah.
So for me, because again, I love deep character stuff. Obviously, we love that on this podcast.
Oh my God,
we love deep relationships. We love all of the things. I was really hungry for more of that because when we meet all of these characters, I'm intrigued by all of them and I want to get to know them. I want to get to know what makes them tick. And yes, we do get pieces of that. But I think in terms of kind of building these big emotional bridges with each other, I wanted to see that play out more.
Yeah, I think for me, this was a book of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much of the heart. And I think that's where, for me, like the journey fantasy, I'm okay to be on a journey fantasy. If it's not as action oriented, that's great. For me, I think I just need such strong characters and I really need to know exactly who they are, what they're about. And, you know, there were a lot of times, specifically, it was with Inara and Elagast's POVs that I had to check whose POV I was in.
Yeah.
Kissin's was pretty distinct because she curses, she swears, she has a certain attitude that bleeds into her inner dialogue.
Same with Skedi. Like his was
same
pretty
with Skedi because he's a god animal, that he had a very unique voice, where Inara, as a 12-year-old, and Elogast, as a grown man, their POVs kind of felt similar at times. And I had to check almost every single time that I was in their chapter whose I was in at some point. But I think there was a lot of great technical aspects of the writing in terms of she spends a lot of time describing all of the herbs going into Elogast's bread.
You
all
can
of
the smell
specific
this book.
Sense of everything and like creating that very vivid picture. Mm-hmm. However, I really wanted some of that with the characters, where it's like, what are their micro expressions? What are the little movements that show that people care for each other? And in the inner dialogue, there's a lot of, it's just logical movement, where from the start of one paragraph to the end of that same paragraph, we've completely flipped perspectives and completely kind of like gone through a little arc.
Yeah.
And it's very, very logical.
It is. It's literally like we were talking about this a little bit before the podcast, where to me, it read that it's how we directly think mm-hmm. instead of having kind of a breather in between the thought process yeah. to describe what's going on in the body, what's going on around the person as they're processing, as they're going through these thoughts, that it's very direct. So reading it, it's like, this isn't incorrect because this is exactly what our brains do.
Mm-hmm,
they fly all over the place and they can be very contradictory. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think I've ever read it that way
yeah.
in a book before. So like you said, it does lean a lot more into the logical than the emotional in that way.
Yeah. And I think that was for me part of it that made it feel kind of like a classic. And I don't mean that as a dig
no.
to classics or anything like that. But sometimes when I read, this is how I feel when I read some older classics, and not all of them, but sometimes there's just a detachment because storytelling, I think, was just a little bit different. There wasn't, you know, the really heavy emotional inner dialogue. You were really more of an outsider looking into a story, in my opinion. That's how I read a lot of things. A lot of older mythologies, you're experiencing the story. That's how I kind of felt this way, rather than a lot of modern writing now. You're really in it with a character. Mm-hmm. Like so many people are able to self-insert because
yeah.
you're just so in it. And I think both can be really, really wonderful. I don't say that as a negative thing. I want to make that clear. That's
no.
not a negative thing. I think for me, because it was so logic-based, I then just really wanted to feel like I knew exactly who the characters were
mm-hmm.
and have that be really, really fleshed out and really feel their unique imprint so that I just tracked with them because I can follow logic. I can follow logic all day, but I want to be able to root for you even if your logic makes no sense. So yeah, as a whole, I don't know if it was entirely for me, but like I said, there were a lot of really, really wonderful elements. And I think definitely once we got into like after 60% mark, then I was much more engaged with the book. That's when things kind of pick up a bit. There's some actions. They've been together for a little bit. So the connections are more there. There's more of some feeling that was being evoked from me. So definitely, I think like the last third of the book, I was much more in.
I feel like for me, obviously, I was really hooked in the beginning. It lessened a little bit after the first couple chapters, but I honestly really did enjoy her going home to Yatho and Tele and just kind of sitting in that space of chosen family. Like, I did really enjoy that, even though not that much was going on. And then I feel like I would have little pockets of being mm-hmm. drawn in.
Yeah.
Once they were on the road. I had a little bit of trouble with Elogast, and I do want to get into that when we touch on his character. But that definitely picked up for me as well, kind of towards the end, mm-hmm. maybe the last 50 pages or so, which,
yeah.
again, short book, that is a big chunk of the book.
Yeah. I think the turning point for me was when it was the second time the shadow demons came and they got separated
yeah.
from the group. But that scene of fighting, that had more of an emotional punch for me. And then once they got separated from all of the characters that kind of like were inconsequential to the story, and I'm like, okay, now we can just focus on our main like POV characters
yeah.
and their quest. I think that's when it had the turn for me.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair though, I was interested in some of the members of the group. I was a little disappointed that we didn't get to see some of their stories play out, like the three women who all wanted to die together. There's aspects of that that I kind of wish we had more of. But yeah, once we did get away from that group, it gave it the space to go a little deeper with their relationships.
I want to say, I knew that Michael, the harp player,
or Mickle,
I'm going to say Michael.
It's more dignified.
I knew Michael was going to die because he played the harp. And I was like, this kind of character never survives the road.
No.
The road is dark and full of terrors.
And it definitely was for Michael.
He was
tossed
a ginger
like
harp
a rag.
Like, he just doesn't have a chance. I was like, people are going to die on this road trip. I know they are. And it's going to be Michael. Michael is first.
I mean, I do want to just touch very quickly on the shadow demon stuff, because I have to say, I was actually genuinely creeped out when it's like the scent is in the air. The way that that scene was written, yeah. Where I think it's from Elagast's perspective, if I'm remembering it right, that he notices that, like, Kissin stands.
Yeah.
Like, she sees something.
Yeah. As soon as monsters came in, I was like, yes.
It's the Ron Swanson smelling Tammy too.
Exactly. That's literally what I pictured. It's like, she's here.
She's here.
Can smell her cloven hooves.
I just really loved that. I just wanted to give that little detail just kind of a shout out, because that was something that really pulled me in.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of our characters, because we have four POV characters. And again, I think that was also another surprise going into the book, because the back blurb, it's really focusing.
She has beef with the back of this book.
Beef with the back of the book. It really focuses on Kissin.
Kissinna. She's our person into the story.
She's our person into the story. She isn't necessarily the main POV. They're all fairly equal in their POVs. And sometimes I feel like her turn got skipped every once in a while.
Because I think for a lot of the story, there honestly just was more going on with the other characters in terms of the internal struggle. So with Kissin, she's just kind of there. And there is some stuff, obviously, with her and Inara. But
she is the one character that she kind of has no stakes in getting to Blenraiden. Because Inara needs to get there because of Skedekef. And Elagast needs to get there for Eren, where Kissin is really just her body. Bodyguard. Like, it's funny because they're like, oh, I'm your bodyguard? What? It's like, that's literally what you are.
Yeah.
That is the role you'll be playing, where she doesn't have a personal thing. It's just the promise she makes to Tele to not abandon Inara.
Yeah, that is like the big thing that she will have to face should she fail, is letting that gorgeous, beautiful soul down.
Yeah.
And she loves her more than her own hands. Mm-hmm. So in that way, the stakes for her are much different. But also, I think there is something that is endearing, that's what that is for Kissin. It's upholding that promise, that hers is more of an emotional, it's like the softer side to her, holds that weight.
She's a very masculine energy. She is a fighter. She is very rough with her words. She is brash. She's a smart ass. She's not so feeling oriented. And I, very early on, I was like, she's a rough around the edges kind of character.
She is. I mean, again, the book kicks off so beautifully with, we have the prologue. So we see her as a child, and then we're reintroduced to her as an adult, and seeing her go after Enerast. Like, I really liked that opening chapter to see, like, okay, my brain's starting to fill in what's happened on the in-between since we've last seen her, and that she is a god killer, that she is a warrior, that she obviously has a personal vendetta and vengeance brewing in her heart for all of the gods. She's very angry in that way, which you clearly understand why, because we've just lived through it. I liked that was the starting point that we got for her. And obviously Kissin's journey is more about the softening than being the warrior, because she's already that.
Yeah.
She's knows how to do this. Raiden.
This, like, journey isn't a hardship for her.
Yeah, she's done this, like, more than once.
Yeah.
So she's a professional journeyer and warrior at this point. So it's really about the relationships that she has. So the relationship with Inara, and she obviously sees herself in Inara, because Inara is basically a little Kissin.
They both, at 11 to 12 years old, had their family home and their family
burned. Very specific.
By the same fire god, really. Not that they know that.
I like that her arc, again, I wish that we got a little bit more development with it, a little bit more of the relationship detail with it. It's focusing more on the trust aspect rather than the getting from point A to point B, or fulfilling a quest in a more deeply rooted way, like Elagast and Inara and Skedi as well.
Yeah, and like you said, she's a very angry character. So when we get to the end, she stays because she still has that need for vengeance.
Yeah.
She tells Elagast, this isn't sacrifice. This is vengeance. This is an opportunity I thought I'd never have. So this is the opportunity that's just kind of popped up. We learn that she has tried to summon, I'm going to call this goddess Seth, because
Seth?
Hisseth, Seth. I tried looking it up. I tried looking all of these up. I feel like the names in this book and the places are really threatening to embarrass me with my pronunciation more than any other book.
I mean, we're just doing the we're doing our best disclaimer right now. We should have done that at the beginning. It's fantasy. We are doing our best.
Doing my best. So I'm going to call her Seth because I think that might be what it is. But we find out that she has tried to summon Seth before.
I love that reveal.
I know.
She tried numerous times as a kid. It's like, it's not funny, but also it was a little funny to me.
I just imagined her ringing a bell so mad.
Yeah.
And her god killer mentor, Pato, telling her, like, she's not going to answer because she knows you want to murder her. You have pure murder pure and hatred in your heart. I don't blame her.
I was also whatsoever. Good for you, girl, for just going for it.
Yeah. But I liked that she got her moment to take on Seth. That wasn't quite where I thought it was going, mm-hmm. just because her journey was more about the softening, and then it was kind of like, no, get out of here. And I obviously she was also doing it to distract her so that Elagas and Inara could get away. It was kind of a yeah. two birds with one stone moment. But I loved their little battle of kind of going back and forth and her maneuvering her to the cliff's edge. And I did think of
Harry Potter.
Yes.
Because that's what I wrote down. I was like, she Harry Pottered off that she cliff.
Kissin gets set to the edge of the sea cliffs. She wraps her in a lover's embrace and, you know, has her moment and they jump off together. And all I could think of was Harry grabbing Voldemort and saying, let's finish this how we started it, Tom.
Together.
And then yeeting themselves off the cliff.
Yeah.
Off of broken Hogwarts.
Into the sea.
You know what? And I think it's a great move.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic move. I thought that that was such a beautiful image.
Yeah. And I really like, again, I feel like in this episode, I'm going to keep reverting back to the fact that I really do love the book's mythology with the gods, is that I love that the elements don't mix. I love that because Seth is a fire god.
Yeah.
That mixing with water is what would destroy her. So I like that there's a boundary within their power. And obviously, Kissin is very cunning and bright, and she uses mm-hmm. that to her advantage. And then when she's down there, she makes a choice, and she does revert back to that softness, choosing the promise to Inara.
I did like the mirroring of, obviously, her father threw her into the sea against her will, and now she's taking Seth down with her, and here she is in the water again, and she says, I am going to deny this promise again. Like, she really just doesn't give a shit about her father sacrificing his life for her.
I'm like, I feel like you should be at the age now where you're like, wow, I'm starting to see life through my father's eyes. Because that always happens as you get older. You start yeah. understanding where your parents are coming from on things. And I'm like, you're 26. Like, this process should have started.
So she's like, no, I'm going to annoy Ocitizen and deny his promise. And then she hears Inara's voice and she's like, oh, yeah, I really shouldn't leave her. I'm like, I'm glad that you made this choice. Like, maybe you can understand your father's choices now, because she was always kind of saying it like, oh, I'm going to annoy Ocitizen mm-hmm. by denying this promise. And my thought is, what about your father who sacrificed his life for this?
You were there for what happened.
Yeah.
This was a choice that he made to save you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wrestled with that a little bit reading mm-hmm. the book. It's like, oh, kiss him. Come on.
I
now. Like,
I know we're angry, but I think denying yourself life is not achieving anything that you want it to.
I know. I just think of Angela on The Office. She's like, you are throwing up for the wrong reasons. In the end, it all works out, but like, just stop getting in your own way. Like, let that be an act of love.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, her choosing to accept that is an act of love for Inara. I like that that's where it ends with her. Literally,
yeah.
just her making that choice.
Oh, yeah. No, I love her making that choice. Her actually taking the god up on the promise that her father made. It's just really fulfilling the other half of the bargain that was made.
Yeah.
But do you know another visualization I had in that moment? If everyone can bring the movie Twilight New Moon to the forefront, there's a scene where Bella Swan.
Oh my God.
Cliff jumps. And who is waiting for her? But the redheaded villain. And you know, Edward pops up, and I'm like, kind of like Ocitizen. And there's a moment in the book where she's sinking. And I'm like, oh my God, it's like Bella. Bella is sinking. And Ocitizen saves her like Jacob saves her.
You know, it's just really fun how everything comes back to Twilight. no matter where we go or how far we run from it.
I had a lot of great visualizations in my brain.
I'm surprised actually that one didn't pop into mine.
So yeah, that's what was going on in my brain. But like you said, I loved it. It was a very beautiful, and like jokes aside, it was very cinematic for me in my brain. Having that go down, obviously, Inara and Elagast are watching that long drop as well. But it's a very beautiful ending for Kissin in the water, and just choosing, in my mind, it's choosing to let go of the anger for someone that you love. Choosing to let go of kind of her stubbornness because she's important to Inara's safety. So
yeah.
Thank you, Kissin, for making that choice. And with that, let's talk a little bit about Inara.
I was really intrigued by Inara when we meet her, because Inara, she is tied to a god. And I really like the concept and the visual of her being able to see everyone's color. Again, it's like with the god lore in this, that emotion is such a powerful thing. And obviously we see that kind of play out as Inara discovers what she can do. But I like that you have this little girl that can read most people. I like that it puts her on this level with Skedi, where these are two clever beings, because now she's also able to access this way to understand people and kind of get a unique insight into what's going on. I liked that introduction to Inara. And she's like not your typical kid.
Yeah, and she's at an age, because she's 12 years old, where I think that's kind of a difficult age to write because as a 12-year-old, I mean, most girls have been through puberty. Like, you're basically a teenager. Like, you do have more intelligence. Like, she's not like 5 years old. When you're 12, you can be completely self-sufficient. Like, you have full use of your thumbs.
Just about.
That's a little less than halfway to 25. So you probably have 50% use of your brain. Your brain is 50% developed. But I think it's a really hard age to write. And I think maybe that's kind of why I got her and Elagast sometimes confused when I was just in their chapters, because she wrote her more adult, in my opinion. Like, they kept referring to her as a child. But when I was 12 or 13, I feel like that was the age that people started thinking I was 16 or 17 years old. So they kept referring to her as a child. And of course, she is a child. However, depending on you personally, because some of us really stick in that awkward phase a lot longer. But I think some girls, by the time they're 12, it's like you're kind of really looking more like a teenager.
Her internal world is more adult.
It's much more adult, because even her response is to say, if I would have known about the burning of the manor, I would have stayed. I would have burned.
Yeah.
That's a very mature take, because children would not process things. Like, a small child wouldn't process something and say, yeah, no, I would have stayed and died.
Yeah. And just in general with the group, because of Inara's abilities, and just like taking power aside, her capabilities as a young woman, we'll say, like, she was raised in a fine house. Her mother gave her an education. She knows how to use a bow. Like, she is an active participant in the group. So she doesn't need, it's like she needs protection, but she doesn't need protection the way that a smaller child would.
Yeah.
And she's actually able to contribute.
Yes, because I think a lot of her arc is really just focused on, okay, I can take care of myself. There's a lot of sentiments behind that of, no, I'm going to stay because I need to be able to show that I can take care of myself. And she's saying, you know, I'm my mother's legacy now. It's really her, I would say, kind of crossing out of childhood in that way.
Yeah.
If you're like, I'm a legacy and I can do things myself and I am in the rebellion and I am the unraveler and I'm all these things, that I think that felt like, I don't know, to me, it's kind of like the tragedy of girls having to become women, essentially, like women in their minds too young. And I think there's a line that Kissin says about that, that like young girls grow up fast, that it was kind of bittersweet, I think, for me to go through that with her because she is so young.
Yeah.
But to step into that place means that there's such a loss of innocence, and that's a huge responsibility to take on, to say, I am my mother's legacy, and be taking an active part, because even at the end with Elagast, he's her and she's having to like drag him along, and he's taller. It says he's a head and a half taller than Kissin, which means he's like 100 times bigger than Inara probably, and she's having to heal him and unravel his curses and all that kind of stuff, where it's a very real thing for a lot of girls that you grow up too fast. And it was very tragic, while also it was good to watch her find her step.
Yeah. And I think something that got me really early on with her, just kind of in that vein, is the fact that Skedi has been with her for 5 years. She's been keeping this very real secret, which has extreme consequences for 5 years.
Yeah.
So she was 7 years old when she had to grow up in that way mm-hmm. and make these kind of decisions for herself, for her family, because by staying quiet, she's also protecting her family, her mother. So by the end of it, like you said, she's ready to step into her mother's shoes, but also she's like, I'm the dangerous one now.
Yeah.
That she's really channeling, I don't want to say kissing, but because they are so similar.
There's an anger there.
Yeah. So she's really leaning into that, especially because she thinks that Kissin is dead. Besides Elagas, like she is on her own.
Yeah.
With, you know, with Sketty, but that she's at that place where we leave her of they should fear me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was really interesting following her character. And I don't know, something that I really wish that we got the answer to in this book is why she was a secret, why people didn't know about her. It's like some people did. Obviously, Elagas knew
yeah,
who she was.
It comes out later that her mother announced her pregnancy. She didn't announce who the father was, mm-hmm. but she announced her pregnancy. She announced the birth. She brought Inara as a baby to meet the royal family. She brought her to court, which is essentially announcing her to the world. So
why hide her at home?
So why hide her at home? Or why is it that certain people don't know? Or is it that they knew that Inara did exist and they think that she's dead? Like, was another story put out by her mother?
I'm sure that her mother is doing this to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it just should be common knowledge that she exists because of all the things you mentioned where she was taken to court. Like, Elagas knew who she was.
Yeah.
I wanted some clarity on what that was, and maybe that's something that we get in later books.
Yeah.
Or in the next book.
Oh, I'm sure.
But that was something like, oh, but I do want to know, like, what is this? Because even Kissin's like, what is this? Is bizarre.
Yeah.
That some people know, but the people that should know mm-hmm. don't.
I mean, do you know what was one moment where I was like, you are 12?
What?
And this was one of those moments where I was like, I think I'm a little tired because I was so tickled.
What?
There's a scene where Inara, you know, she tells Elagas who she is. He kind of tricks it out of her a little bit. And then she goes and tells Kissin, like, he knows. I think we should trust him. And Kissin's like, you'll be the death of me. She's not being really harsh or anything. She's just like, no, people turn their backs on you.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't just trust the random stranger. And Nara's inner dialogue, she says, she didn't know what to say, how to make Kissin listen, understand, care at all about what she wanted. And in my notes, I wrote, Inara, why would she care about what you want? You're 12 and she is trying to get you to an illegal city safely. And then yesterday, after I finished the book, I thought to myself, also, Elagast was literally the reason for the Shadow Beasts.
Mm-hmm.
He summoned Seth, who could have killed Kissin and really would have if she didn't call on her bargain. He was going to give his heart to his traitorous friend who he knew his whole life but somehow didn't know was wackadoo.
Yep.
Where literally all of the threats come back to Elagast. And I'm like, that's being 12. You're like, why won't she listen? Why won't she understand? And it's like, Kissin is right. You can't trust him because he's a strange man. But also in the end, once we know, obviously we know he's not mm-hmm. going to betray them and all of that. But in the end, he was responsible for everything bad that was happening,
yeah.
essentially, or played a part in it. Shadow Beasts summoning the god that killed Kissin's family and basically making his promise to give his heart to Aaron was like a monster. And it's like he had no idea that his friend is this way, despite him constantly being like, I don't like his politics.
Yeah.
Just made me laugh. And like, actually, Kissin was so right.
She
not
was
to want to be near this man.
But I mean, like, that it's what Kissin says about, like, I've lived a life of like knowing why you shouldn't trust people. And as a reader, I'm always like, well, you know, it's about like learning to trust the right people.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, in this world, I can't argue with that perspective at all with what she does and what she's seen. Yeah, no, I thought that was funny because again, that's also written from a slightly more mature perspective as well, like the wording she uses,
yeah.
because it reminds me of what you hear when women are, say, unhappy in their marriage.
like
Rick is not giving me what I need. I need to feel heard. Like,
you I are need 12. Him to understand.
You are 12 and this is the situation.
For one job is to keep you alive and deliver you to this illegal city.
And you sought her out.
She's like, why doesn't she care about what I want? Because what you want is stupid.
She's just trying to keep you alive because you went to her. She's giving you what you asked for.
She made a promise to her family that she wouldn't abandon you. Oh my god. That just, like, I got so tickled. She's like, you are 12.
Well, speaking of Inara, maybe we should also just jump into Sketty. I really loved him as a character. I like that he's morally gray.
I was about to say, I loved Sketty as a character. I'm going to make that very clear. I loved him. However, he was serving Peter Pettigrew for me.
Oh, yeah.
And there was, I don't know if mom told you this growing up, but mom, when I was young, in the phase of, like, you're training your kids not to get kidnapped kind of thing, mom used to always say, grown men or adults in general, do not come to children for help.
Yeah.
So from the moment it was like, oh, a god showed up to a 7-year-old. And he's fully reliant on her.
Mm-hmm.
I fully was ready to go someplace really dark because I saw the word dark fantasy associated with this book.
Oh, I see.
I was like, oh, this could get very dark in terms of, I mean, it does kind of go there later on if he uses her and manipulates her. He takes away her autonomy. Like, that's very serious stuff he's doing.
I did think that the book was going to go in a slightly different direction with that once we got to that point. I was like, oh, this is what the book is.
Yeah.
This is it. And I was like, oh, but then never mind. But I think that's why I really liked him as a character. I like that he is a god, a person, a soul.
He desires to be worshipped and loved.
He does, but, like, he genuinely cares for Inara. Like, he genuinely loves her in whatever way he's able to do so.
Mm-hmm.
That is genuine. But yeah, on the other side of that, he's also dealing, sometimes embracing, sometimes fighting his very nature, mm-hmm. which is to seek out love, devotion. And I mean, these are things that as people, like, we all want love, we all mm-hmm. want belonging and all of that, which I like that there is that human relatability with those aspects of his character. But I really like that it's like, I believe that he loves Inara, but that overriding at times urge and desire to be the god would take over. So for me, that was, like, really kind of the emotional anchor with a lot of the story mm-hmm. is their relationship that made me feel a lot of things. And a lot of them weren't good because it made me sick when he did that and he took over. Yeah. But I really liked the theme that we get to see kind of play out between them. Did love fix betrayal? I really liked that idea between the two characters. Isn't that just the question, and how Inara is supposed to navigate that? Because they're still stuck to each other
mm-hmm.
and she still loves him.
Yeah. And I think he was just such a brilliant, complicated character because you do get into the argument of, okay, he's a god of white lies. Can we be that mad when he's true to his nature?
Yeah.
Because there's not a lie around what he is. And then you get into Kissin's point of view of, like, maybe we can't blame them for this, but they do harm. So what do we do with things that do harm? Because it's in their nature to do harm. And you could play, you know, both yeah. sides, devil's advocate, all of that kind of stuff. And I thought that that was a really brilliant character, and just in general with the gods, but specifically him, because he's a god of white lies. And leading up to him taking over Inara, he has a lot of little lines, and, you know, he starts influencing people in the group, and mm-hmm. he's like, oh my god, I'm so powerful, I like being able to change people.
He loves it.
He
is getting high off of that, of, like, people starting to kind of bicker and, like, seeing that emotion.
Drunk. He is butt chugging power right now. He is drinking. He's drinking up all of the power. And so by the time he gets there, I thought, I'm like, there's no coming back from this. Or
yeah.
here's the villain, or here's something, maybe not evil, evil villain, but something that's very complicated. Because he says, he had to. He didn't want to be near her, no matter what Inara wanted. Kissin had no respect for him, his life, his desires. He could not bear this any longer. He was a god. So in this sentiment, it's, I didn't have a choice, which mm-hmm. that's always a dangerous road when yeah. characters say they don't have a choice, saying, basically, I want this and I don't care what Inara wants. and then saying, I can't bear it. I am a god. Therefore, I take precedence over a human.
I think that was just such a fantastic moment because it just complicated his character so much. And again, like, I really like the pull of that nature because the gods aren't inherently good or bad. Mm-hmm. It kind of is dependent on the situation and how far something escalates. And it's like how you use a knife. You can use that to butter some bread or you can use that to kill someone. I like that with Sketty, we see the survival instinct of a god come out where he, like you said, he thinks that he doesn't have a choice with that. And he's using the words that he's doing this for Inara, but also when he goes over to the dark side, he starts backtracking on how he promised never to use his power on her. And then he starts making comments like, well, it was never binding. Like, we never made an official like promise to it.
And
like,
I should have done this years ago.
Yes. And he walks through like, I should have done this. And then I could have done it with her mother. Like, he has all of these plans, which it's like, it makes me sick because I don't want him to do any of this to Inara. Like, this needs to stop.
Because she's a child.
But I liked the complication in his character in that relationship, that he's constantly with the push and pull of, I am a god and these are the things that I literally am wired to want, and him having to fight against that because he chooses love.
Yeah. And I think after that point, though, everything he was saying, because he says, I wouldn't do anything to hurt you, Ina. And I'm like, okay, yeah, god of white lies. Where for me reading it, it's like, okay, what if even him saying he loved her was a lie? Maybe he had respect for her and like love is the white lie, or where is that line? Because if he's a god of white lies, it's like, where is the truth? Where is the lie? And obviously by the time we get to the end, it's very clear that he loves her. Now he seems to have love for Kissin and he doesn't want to hurt her, and that goes back and forth. But I think I kind of wanted it to get a little darker. Mm-hmm. And I will say for me personally, because he does this, he takes over a child's body against her will. She's crying.
Yeah.
She is visibly upset because at first she's like, yeah, I don't really mind. Oh, wait, now actually I do, even though he had never done that before. And no. I'm like, did you know that he could do that? Because she did not seem surprised at first when he did it. And then she was, and like, I didn't quite understand what was going on with her knowledge of his powers and stuff like that. But she's obviously very upset. It's wrong. It's gross. So for me, I think I needed a bigger moment because it kind of made me laugh, because they have the moments with the shadow monsters, they fight them off, the bandits come. And there's this kind of dramatic moment of the bandits outnumber them, Elagast is hurt, it's not looking great. And Sketty, you know, he grows to the size of a horse and he looks at her and says, forgive me, Inara. And I'm kind of prepared for him to attack people or do something that will get him hurt, even though I was like, wait, if you get hurt, won't that just hurt Inara?
Yeah.
That was also kind of like in my mind. But then the bandits just run away. And then in everybody's point of view, in Elagast's, in Kissin's, and in Inara's, everyone's like, I know we're mad at him, but also like, he was willing to do that for Inara. And I'm like, he grew to the size of a horse and said, basically was like, boo.
That's all it took,
and
it turns
scared
out.
Scared them away. Where they're like, oh my god, he really loves her. And I'm kind of looking around like, he only grew to the size of a horse. He grew and then shrunk, and it took about 3 seconds where I'm like, if he had risked his life, and kind of that's how they were talking about it, as if he had risked his life for hers. However, him risking his life would mean risking Inara's life, potentially. So also, like, that idea for me didn't click, because that doesn't count. I don't know, something wasn't clicking, and I think I needed a different event to be like, okay, I forgive you and I trust you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm someone reading his character that I never had any doubt about whether he loved her or not, because it's coming from his inner dialogue. So I, despite all of the extremely horrible, seemingly unforgivable, problematic things that he does, I think that the love there is true. But that being said, when we get to that scene, I'm like, you know what? I know that his intention is good, but I also need something more there, because he grows and shrinks all the time. And another little detail that I really liked is that when he was getting high, off mm-hmm. of the power, like he would grow slightly,
yeah.
which was to me creepy and kind of foul. Like the way yeah. it was written, I was like, ew.
Like his ego grows yeah. and he physically manifests bigger.
I love that detail.
He's so full of power, so drunk
that he just was expanding. So that scene, him expanding, that didn't really do it for me either. It didn't feel like, I think especially for kissing, that mm-hmm. that
would be impressive.
Be the thing.
No, that didn't quite click for me. I mean, I'm happy that it wasn't that. Like, when we get to the end of the story, I think it's really sweet when he's talking about how the promise of a shrine in Blenraiden had lost its appeal. You know, he had a little life, but a good one, with someone who loved him. And he says he had risked it all for what? For this. And I liked these realizations. And even I really liked it when he was like, I have to save Inara and Kissin. Like, I can't let yeah. Kissin die. Like, I like they soften to each other. I think I just really wanted there to be some more hardships and some more kind of earning it, because that's a massive betrayal of trust.
Yeah, when we got to that scene, I too really liked his realization, but I was also like, oh, it's this kind of a story. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that something else was going to happen with his character instead of just getting to the heart of that. I think that is a really sweet, beautiful mm-hmm. relationship arc. It's just, if that's where we were going, if that was what it was, I think I just wanted something else, a bigger gesture, something where there was space for him to verbalize that to Inara.
Yeah.
And to see that play out a little bit more.
Or even if they would have found out that, okay, hurting Inara would hurt him, but hurting him doesn't hurt her.
Yeah.
Like, if they found out, no, you're just dependent on her, she's not dependent on you, then I think that would carry more weight. But from my understanding of the book, it seems like it goes both ways. Like, he grew to the size of a horse.
I know, because it is just so upsetting, or at least it was to me, to see the hurt between them, because they were so close. And
she's also, like, lost her whole family.
Yeah, and also, I probably should have prefaced this when we started talking about Skedi, but I realize that there is a big piece of me, because of how I picture him kind of being like a fluffy bunny, I probably do feel more of an emotional pull because I'm picturing
an animal,
basically like a bunny god mm-hmm. being sorry and hurting. And
oh no, as soon as he was sorry, I felt bad and I had to remind myself, I'm like, no, he took over a literal child who's lost her entire family. She is alone in this world, and that is so wrong. But I'm like, but he's a bunny.
He's bunny and he's sorry. And he's alone. And like, when they are writing, it's Blenraiden, and Nara's like, how do you like your new home? Like, oh my god, that's so sad. Because he's trying to apologize to her, and she's like, mm-hmm, how do you like your new home? Jesus.
No, but I just kept going back to what our mother told me. Like, grown-ups don't ask children for help. Where I'm like, you're a god. It's the same concept. And it's like, he's obviously been around. Mm-hmm. We don't know his history.
Yeah.
Also, I kind of didn't trust him. I'm like, all you remember is, like, horrible sea conditions and screaming and the hides of bloody beasts. I'm like, you aren't innocent. I don't know. That's where my brain was going.
It's either you were part of it mm-hmm. or you were maybe with the people and someone was trying to get you out, or like, yeah. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I do need answers on that. But yeah.
But we end in a place of love.
We end in a place of love. Everything is fine. That Inara was the home he was looking for the whole time. But I really liked him as a character.
Well, maybe now it's time to talk about Elagast. And you know okay. what? When we pick up with Elagast, he loves folding dough and he is bored.
He loves some bread.
He loves a flatbread. He loves all of his herbs, all of his spices.
We get to know all of his herbs and spices very, very well in this book.
Very, very well.
He is extremely haunted by the past.
Yes, he has PTSD. He is actively experiencing flashbacks. He has tremors.
Yes, and through that, that's how we get an insight into some of the things that happened during the war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from a reader's perspective, I actually kind of liked that being the window into mm-hmm. getting to see, I mean, first of all, like, why he is the way that he is, but some of the history that comes with the world.
I was really eager to have an understanding of the world in that way. I think I had a really solid understanding of like, these are how the gods work and all of that. But I really wanted to understand the politics. It's like, how did the gods and the politics and the running of these kingdoms and all the wars, how did those all play together? So I was always really hungry for that information.
Yeah. And Elagast, he is depressed. He has been away from the king's service, which he left because he didn't agree with his politics, for 3 years. He says that he lives a good life, but he doesn't love it. He hates it, and I think he just kind of hates being alive.
Yeah.
So that's where we start with him. But one of my favorite Elagast scenes is that first scene when Aaron comes to visit him.
I was eating that up, and I'm going to tell you why. I 100% thought they were gay.
Absolutely. And I was here for it. I loved it. I wanted it. I was like, ooh, this is really interesting. What was going on in that kitchen? Their dynamic.
Their dynamic in that one, he's like, yeah, sit down. I'll serve you. I'll do this. And then he stays the night and he's like, oh, this is the first time in a long time that I haven't had night terrors. And there's all this mystery about, you know, it should have been me. I should have been the one that died, not Aaron. And like, I felt like there was this big kind of like heart-centered drama going on and this stuff. And even later in the book, how Anara is always like, oh, Elagast's colors are turning like purple or blue with faith and affection. I know he's thinking about Aaron.
Yes.
And like, the fact that a 12-year-old can look at you and your colors and know who you're thinking about. I'm sorry. I actually have beef with the fact that
too.
He is straight, or that he's not at least gay for Aaron.
1,000%. And Kissin obviously asks him later in the book about it.
That was my favorite part. I wrote in all caps in my notes, thank you. Because she looks at him and she says, were you in love with him? Did you used to fuck? Is that it? Because this would make a lot more sense if you did. And I thought, yes, it would.
Because I'm sorry, like, I know that you can have non-romantic devotion, but whatever was going on in that kitchen, I felt the chemistry, and no one can convince me otherwise.
No one can convince me otherwise. And especially because there was just so much language around what happened. Because at the end of that chapter, he says, I need this to go back, to make it right, and to put the past to rest. Then maybe, just maybe, he could begin to move on. So I'm like, okay, something really serious happened. Like, we know that Aaron sacrificed himself for him in this conversation. We know this. So I thought, okay, what happened here? Like, this is very serious. There's drama, there's mystery. It turned out not to really be anything. It was just Aaron jumped in front of an axe for him, essentially. Like, that's all it was. But some of this language, I felt like, was really hinting towards the fact that they have a complicated past because of whatever happened that night, what happened before that night. Obviously, he left because of the politics, but it just felt like there had to be something connected to that night. And I was very convinced that it had to do with their relationship. And I thought it was just so odd that in this world where everyone is gay, this is just a world where all of these couples are queer.
Yes.
I mean, Kissin is a very queer character. We see lots of queer relationships. Elagast has two mothers.
Yep.
This is a gay-friendly world.
It's the norm. And again, I really liked their chemistry.
It's such good chemistry for the one chapter they had together.
I think I read up until a point, obviously, because we get the relationship with Kissin, as that's just how it was, because everything that I was reading was supporting it.
Because here's his journey. He's going on this quest on behalf of Aaron. Like, everything rides on that. And he ends up sleeping with Kissin. However, who does he choose in the end? He chooses Aaron. He chooses to wake up, leave her behind, and he says, I shouldn't have done that. That was never actually an option. And he even says, what is Kissin's life and even Inara's for Aaron's, saying that he will prioritize, kind of like if Kissin and Inara had to die. That's how I read that, as he will choose Aaron because Aaron is king and his life means more than theirs. And I was like, that's a weird take.
And also, he is doing all of this. He feels this love for Aaron, despite the fact that he was horrified by his politics. And like, what Aaron did? Aaron did horrendous things.
Yeah.
That is a lot of death and destruction. And yet, he still holds on to that. And I know that you can if it's not romantic. But again, the stage was set at the beginning of the book. And so when we move into his relationship with Kissin, I was like, wait, I'm sorry. Like, is he attracted to her? Is this becoming something?
No, there was a comment that I knew it was coming. I wanted to believe it wasn't. It's when he says, like, the scent of pine sap and her sweat, like, sends a thrill of anticipation through him. And he's like, for what? He didn't know. It's like, what? No.
No, I'm sorry.
Take your thrill and put it away.
You need to finish the rest of that quote because it says, it was like when the scent of bread changed in the oven just as it began to crisp. And I was like, what?
Take it out of the oven.
Is going
Take it out of the oven.
On? And their relationship, like we were talking about earlier, that is one that I felt, not only because of the Aaron stuff, but the Aaron stuff was a big factor in it, that when they got together, I was like, I feel like I'm not getting what I need here to make the leap into, oh, they're at this place in their relationship so quickly.
It was very quick. And me personally, I think they had zero chemistry.
Same. Him and Aaron, great chemistry. Kissin and Rosalie, great chemistry.
Great chemistry.
I loved that. So I bought into those attraction situations wholeheartedly. And so seeing Kissin and Elegast together, I didn't quite buy into that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just me.
I didn't buy into it. And I don't know if it was just because she was presented as such a queer character that it just didn't feel like this was the guy for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. There was just something that when you see such good chemistry with her and Rosalie, it didn't click. Like, it almost felt like, I don't want to take over the sexuality of a character, but it just didn't feel like you are actually attracted to this man. Maybe other men, but I just don't believe that you're attracted to him. And I don't feel like you're attracted to her. Something with both of them just felt like a little bit of like queer baiting to me.
Yeah.
That you're setting these things up and writing it in a certain way and for both of them and then putting them together in a heterosexual relationship. And that's our only romance that we follow. Obviously, like there's other couples that are queer and stuff in the world, but this is our romance. It just didn't click for me.
Yeah. And I think even putting that aside just for a moment, like in terms of their chemistry and just what goes on between them, I just, probably more so from Kissin's perspective, I don't think that that would be the guy for her, like you said, because I know that we're introduced to the fact that like Kissin isn't really around a lot of, maybe I'll say kind men, because she has like Yatho and Telly and she's been around women who are fantastic. But I think it's like in terms of Kissin softening, she needs a man who's good, who's going to bring her to that place. But like, I also struggled a lot with Elegast's, I don't know, with some of his character choices. And I'm not saying that he was written incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
But just the things like him walking away and not doing anything about the knight shoving the woman's face down on the ground over the mark of the god, where he walks away from situations where I'm like, you know, if you are a brave man, you're a man of honor, like you tend to do something or like you don't walk away. And that's part of his character arc, is that this is something that he is focused solely on what Aaron needs. So he's sacrificing those pieces of himself, and that's fine. But in terms of like pairing him with Kissin, there was just such a sadness to Elegast's character. And it kind of increased, oddly enough, as we went through the story. Because at the beginning, I felt so incredibly bad for him because he's, like you said, he has PTSD and everything that he's recovering from. But just like his eye on the mission at times, I was like, I feel like I'm not so much in your corner.
Yeah. I think his arc, like you said, which really was about Aaron.
Yeah.
It was about his stance. It's about all that. That didn't set him up in a way that I wanted him for Kissin, because Kissin, she's a very masculine energy. Like, she knows what she's about. She's going to fight for it. Like, she will go down tooth and nail.
Yeah.
And Elegast, his arc, kind of just like going top to bottom. It's like, okay, you grew up as a knight, dedicated yourself to honor, all that. So you questioned Aaron's politics and left. But then he tells Kissin that she shouldn't question Aaron.
Yeah.
Because he's the king. However, it's like you left because you questioned his politics.
Hated that.
And then he's going to give his life for Aaron because he is king, but you're doing that for a king that you don't believe in his politics. And like you said, he was so easily swayed mm-hmm. with the knights. Like, the knights were his people. That's who he was. And they're doing things that he said he would never stand for. But then he was saying that he is a guy that does kill people, unlike Kissin.
Even though we don't see that.
But we don't quite see it. And so it's like, I guess his arc is finally having a backbone.
Yeah.
Essentially, when he says, like, a king who betrays his own people is no king of mine. But it was just so back and forth where you left because you don't like his politics. However, you're telling Kissin, like, how dare you question his politics? No one should mm-hmm. because he's king. Where it's like, whose side are you on? Like, I completely understood it at the beginning of you don't agree with what he's doing, but you love him because you know that. But a lot of the conversation was just about his politics. And it's like, you don't agree with it. So why are you mad that she is also questioning him? Like, maybe for different reasons. And as a love interest for Kissin, who is so, so strong, mm-hmm. that I think you need to be evenly matched in strength. And the strengths can be different. I don't think he has even a modicum of the strength that she does.
No, and he believes himself to be weak. Mm-hmm. So we're not only seeing that as, like, in the moment he's making these choices to walk away. I'm sorry, like, I just really have a hard time, like, being attracted to a man in those situations that he's mm-hmm. like, I'm just going to walk away. Because even when he meets Inara, and he doesn't register it in his inner dialogue that he recognizes her, or, like, knows mm-hmm. who she is, even though he's met her before, he's like, oh, I'm concerned about this child, but it's not my problem. So it's like, okay, so you're really, like, you're in that headspace. But then he's seeing violence, like you said, that comes from his knights, the things that he used to uphold. And he has this inner dialogue throughout the book about, you know, making things right, and he doesn't stand for this. And yet when it comes to, he doesn't even throw out words in this woman's defense, or he does nothing. He just walks away.
He doesn't even go back later to check on her
or
anything, because I understand that there is a certain way you go about things if you're trying not to get caught. There's also stakes for him to stop,
but there's nothing. And then even when it comes to Skedi, like, he is so susceptible to him mm-hmm. and he kicks himself afterwards when he says, I'm weak, like, I'm weak-minded, like, I was manipulated by a god like I was before. Where looking at him compared to Kissin, like, Kissin's obviously immune to that stuff.
Yeah.
So again, it's fine that this is his character, mm-hmm. that these are aspects of who he is. But if we're putting him as a love interest for her, and this is happening so quickly, this isn't like they've been friends for a while mm-hmm. and this is something that has grown into something more, that they've connected on some other level, that we've really seen them kind of, I don't know, be around each other for a longer period of time, because Kissin also is someone that doesn't trust people. So for her to have those feelings so quickly and to let her guard down so quickly, I just wasn't quite invested in that personally.
Yeah. And it's pretty immediate that she's like, oh, he's attractive. And she has a moment where she's kind of mocking him, where she's like, trust me, I'm a baker. I'm handsome and can make bread. I boss people around. Everyone should love me. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I was like, what is going on right now?
Ma'am. But yeah, with Elagas, when we get to the end, after he's slept with Kissin, mm-hmm. his take going up there, like I said, when he says, Kissin was just one person, Inara made two, Aaron was king. To me, that is such a character statement.
Yep.
I just slept with this woman. I've been with these people for, it's like a week or two at this point, but you've been with these innocent people. You are still prioritizing Aaron, despite that you've been on your journey where you have seen what the knights do. So what his knights, mm-hmm. it's not just the local knights, it's Aaron's knights, what they do, what Aaron allows, mm-hmm. you are still going to prioritize him. And it's like, if that's your character choice, that's fine.
Yeah.
But don't try to tell me that he's not in love with Aaron.
Yeah.
Don't even try to tell me that. Don't try to tell me he's not in love with this man.
Don't buy into it. Honestly, like, I know the truth.
He's forsaking everyone else for Aaron.
I've been through the relationship with Kissin, and I still, in my heart of hearts, believe that he's in love with Aaron. I'm sorry. That's a reader choice that I am making, that I am holding to. And maybe he doesn't know it himself.
I don't know. But that statement to me, I'm like, oh, you're not a good guy.
No.
That was like, number one, you're in love with Aaron. Number two, you are not the good guy. You're almost like the nice guy.
That is exactly what I wrote in my notes.
He's the nice guy that turns into a villain.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where the books are going. I don't know. That's not how it felt. In this book, I felt like someone was trying to trick me. But I'm like, don't tell me that he is not so gay for Aaron and that he isn't a nice guy villain. Don't tell me that and expect me to believe it.
I mean, I'm curious where the story's going to go with him, honestly. We're probably wrong on all of those counts.
Yeah.
But I'm still curious. I choose to believe what I believe. Just like Elegast. So I do want to just put the question out there. Did you have any theories about like where the story was going at any point in time?
I definitely thought that Skedeketh was going to be a bigger issue.
Yes.
I don't know if I thought that he was going to be the villain per se. However, I thought that he was going to regain some of his memories.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that memories were going to surface, that Skedeketh was either involved or was maybe kind of like the leader behind some of that. Maybe he was feeding white lies that led to the demise of Aaron's family, mm-hmm. of even Inara's family. I thought he was going to come out and play a much bigger, darker role. And then it would be kind of the, okay, well, he forgot and he's a different person now. Or do mm-hmm. we give second chances to gods? Or because his worshipers were evil, then he was more evil. Like, it's more about the worshipers than the god itself. I thought we were going more down that road.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure, again, what I thought he was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we were getting little flashes of memory, I thought we would get more clarity on that. First of all, when we got to the point where he took over Inara, like I said earlier, I thought that was going to be what the book was,
mm-hmm.
that this has taken a dark turn and it's going to be about with her trying to regain her power. And I didn't even look at Skedi as like a villain. I viewed him more as like an antagonist of him trying to work through that, but that leading to all sorts of problems and complications. Mm-hmm. But then we got past that and that just wasn't the thing. I had a similar thought to you. I wasn't quite sure if he would be good or if he would be evil, or if it's like he was there, but then he got out somehow because he saw what was going on. Like maybe he was good, but I thought that after the betrayal with Inara, and I don't think I held this thought for that long, but I did wonder if, because they're trying to get the heart of a god for Aaron, mm-hmm. that I thought maybe as part of his reconciliation process, his penance with the group, that he would make a sacrifice and do that for the king.
Mm-hmm.
Like do that, like give up that part of himself or like somehow become attached to Aaron and be the savior in that way to save them, I guess, from the rebellion. I don't know. I was a little murky on like, but what would he be saving them from technically with Aaron? But I thought that situation would come into play with the king, that there would be some kind of intertwined resolution with those two things. But then they forgave him really quickly.
Yeah,
so
I think I was just waiting because this story doesn't have a villain
mm-hmm.
until the end.
Yeah.
Because the goddess Seth, she's not a villain.
No.
She's just one of many gods. It wasn't a personal thing. Her follower summoned her there and she killed them, and she's a villain in the end. However, her as a character, she's not present throughout the story. Gods themselves aren't these giant villains that are plotting. Like, they're very much tied to the will of the people.
Yeah.
So that's just a kind of a different thing. There's the shadow beasts, but we don't know what's going on with that. Like, there's just no proper villain. So I think I was waiting for Skedi to pop into more of a proper antagonist role. I was like, oh, it's because the villain is there.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if it was someone else in the group kind of earlier on, if they were in like the pilgrimage or something, I was waiting for it to be kind of like a character that was more present. I mean, getting into kind of the twists at the end, Aaron being evil, I knew from the beginning. I didn't suspect the way
mm-hmm.
that he was evil, and I didn't know that he was kind of already there. I figured that at least throughout the series, Aaron was a problem.
Yeah, I knew that there was something more with Aaron. I wasn't quite sure what I thought that was.
I'm like, his knights are doing bad stuff. I'm like, he's for sure sanctioning this.
They are, and there were just like so many little things. So first of all, when we meet Elegast, I'm like, you feel really gullible to me, first off.
That's what Skedi says. He's like, humans are so gullible.
Yeah. And he does, like, he does give that impression. And so there are just like a bunch of little things, like when they get to the city and he has the run-in with Benjen, or even before that, when he just sees that the knights are there guarding. It's mm-hmm. like, why didn't Aaron give you, it's like, clearance to go or reinstate you? Like, why is this an obstacle that he didn't clear the path for you? Because because you're not allowed to go in. It's against the king's law. But mm-hmm. if the king is ordering you to go, I'm like, this feels like an unnecessary challenge to try to overcome if you're there with the king's bidding. Mm-hmm. There's a million other lies you could have told to get in there and get out. If the king is dying, there's a time frame on this. Like, you need to be in and out in probably less than a month. So I was like, something just isn't feeling good. And then by the time that Elagast got to Seth's shrine, and I wrote down in my notes, I'm like, oh, this is really convenient that every other shrine is broken, shattered, and the one that isn't is the fire god.
I mean, the as soon one as the bell.
Yeah.
Like, not the bell.
Yeah. And then afterwards, I'm like, never mind. Obviously, this is all set up mm-hmm. for a reason. This was all planned and plotted. But I was like, something feels real weird mm-hmm. here. And when Aaron appeared, he was pulled out of the ground. I pictured him like rolling out of the ground.
I don't even know what I pictured, because she like pulls up and it's Hestra for a second, but then like Aaron, I kind of imagined him like sprouting like a flower out of Hestra. Like,
my brain went to weird places and I really enjoyed it.
It's really fabulous.
It's hilarious.
I was like, that's a very dramatic entrance for a straight man, you're trying to tell me.
The planning, the
there's a level of theatricality right now that isn't quite lining up for me.
And he is loving this. And obviously, like, the reason that he's sacrificing Elagast is that that is the last thing that he loves. So again, like, in this story, we have the concept of love, but love is not always a good thing. It's not always rooted in good positive action, whether
it's a lot
with
of love and betrayal.
Or, yeah, with Aaron, that it's like, oh, well, like, love is the reason that I'm betraying you.
Yeah.
It's like, I knew that something was going on. I didn't guess what the twist was.
No, I was like, oh, yeah, Seth. I was like, I should have figured she would come back. I just didn't know what was going on. I think because it was a journey.
Yeah.
Where things kind of seemingly don't always have super strong connections or a super strong path forward, LOL. Of just the sight wasn't that clear. That I was like, oh yeah, her.
But also, it's a big red flag when she shows up and she's like, oh, it's you at last.
At last.
And it's like oh.
He said you would come. And yeah, I'm like,
it's like, I know what you're here for. And he's like, who told you? And it's like, get out. You shouldn't have rung that bell.
Yeah, because he's like, I don't know for sure if it's the one that killed Kissin's family, but it could be.
Maybe.
But I'm going to ring it anyway, and I would deserve to die. I'm like, yep.
But yeah, that was the twist, is that Aaron is evil and he is going to become a god.
I just think Elagast is the most ignorant fool.
Oh, absolutely.
He's like, this god could have been the one that was wreaking havoc in Talicia. That's how you say her land name.
I think I said Talicia.
Talicia.
We're doing our best.
We're doing our best. Over there. She was wreaking havoc over there.
Yonder.
Yonder in the days of yore. She wreaked a havoc. And he's like, you know what? For Aaron, I will potentially unleash what is a very, very dangerous god that would take human sacrifices. Again, Kissin's whole family. So not just one human mm-hmm. sacrifice at a time. A whole family, children, women, the whole shebang. I'm potentially unleashing this. I acknowledge this.
Yes.
And I'm just going to do it for Aaron.
For my boy.
I just kept thinking, Dwight, you ignorant slut.
As a reader, how am I supposed to root for this man?
It's so foolish.
He made all of the wrong choices, and I don't really feel like he's that sorry about like any of it.
Don't tell me you guys are into each other.
He's like, it is what it is. We gotta go.
It's like, people live, they die.
She'd want us to keep going. It's like, you're not even giving yourself a moment.
I know. Anara's like, can we go seconds. Check the water? He's like,
can someone
no.
make sure. He's like, I'd have to walk all that way back. There's a lot going on with my wound.
He's like, that drop, it would have for sure killed her. Cut to the chapter where she's like, I'm alive. I'm in the water. The fall did not kill me.
Oh,
don't
yes.
lie to me.
Oh my god. This is why Anara has to step up and be the leader, because Elagast isn't going to do shit. So yeah, so that's how we end the book.
Yeah, we end the book. Kissin takes up her father's promise that was unfulfilled. O Citizen fulfills that peace. Elagast is freed of his curse because Anara unravels it, gives it to Skedi, and Skedi like tosses it into a field. And I think Anara has the strongest ending in terms of she's ready to go. She is dangerous.
Yes.
She's ready to be a part of the rebellion. She's like hit the Nas.
Yes, she has.
She's ready to hit the Nas.
She's ready to form the Avengers.
Yeah.
Power stance.
She's ready to go. And Skedekath will be right there with her.
Which is so nice because he's come home. He never was able to leave his home, but he's realized that he's home.
And he's cute and he's fuzzy. And he's maybe a little bit morally charcoal, perhaps.
Yeah. But, you know, we love him anyway, especially because he's cute and fuzzy. Well, that brings us to our rapid fire. Are you ready?
I am ready to rapid fire.
Okay. Favorite scene?
I'm going to name two. The prologue and the scene with the river goddess. Mm-hmm. I liked being able to be with another god.
Yeah.
I thought she was really fun to be with her because she truly felt neutral.
Favorite character?
Probably Skedi, just because of his moral charcoal. I think he was really engaging. But out of the three human people, I will say Kissin.
Mm-hmm. Favorite god killer moment?
I loved the scene when the two shadow demons appeared when they were still with the pilgrims. It was the first time in the story I really felt the tension and the stakes and the danger and just the emotional component because of Inara trying to be sent away and Kissin and Elagas fighting for her. I think that was just a really strong moment in the book where it turned a corner for me.
Agreed. Favorite LOL?
I chuckled when it's actually that same scene with the shadow demons when the sun sets and it's the second time they're appearing and John says, "Fuck me and all the gods, not again." He's just so tired. He's like, "Not again, please."
He needs to find a different occupation.
He needs a different occupation with his beard of coins.
Were there any scenes that made you tear up?
I didn't tear up, but it definitely was kind of on the edge in the prologue when she tells her father that I'm going to save you. I'll save you all. And just feeling the desperation and how that chapter ended. I think that was like the most emotionally potent scene for me throughout the book.
And lastly, date, marry, kill. We're going to go with Kissin, Elagast, and Aaron.
I am going to marry Kissin,
mm-hmm.
for sure. She has nice arms. She's very tough. I feel like we could have fun verbal sparring. I'm going to date Aaron.
Yeah.
Because he is a fire god and I can just ask him about that.
Let's talk about you.
I can just talk about him and then I'll pour a bucket of water on him to kill him.
Fair.
And then I'm going to kill Elagast because I cannot stand a nice guy villain.
No.
Aaron knows what he's about.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron at least will be honest and say, I will do what needs to be done for my kingdom.
At least he's got a job. At least he's active in his community.
So what if he's the devil, Rick? I don't like this fake honor.
Yeah, I don't either.
Not when it comes to the person I'm interested in. I stand by what I say.
Agreed.
Okay, Megan.
Yes.
Rapid fire. Favorite scene.
I agree with the scenes that you said, so I'm going to actually pick two more. I also like the scene with the river god, but I actually really liked the scene leading up to it where they're going through the different shrines and seeing the different gods, because I really liked Kelt, the god of broken sandals.
The little mouse boy.
Yeah, and like seeing the diversity and kind of the range in size, power, all of that. I really liked that. And then another, it's just like a little moment that I really liked was when they were walking through the remnants of the banquet hall where the massacre occurred. I really liked the conversation around like the imprint of energy and history in that room. That actually behind the prologue was probably my favorite little bit. I really liked being transported there for that moment.
Favorite character?
Skedi, for sure.
Favorite god killer moment?
I agree. The like the shadow demon bit, for all the reasons that you said, that really got me. That really felt like, okay, we're here, we're moving, we're in action. It. But I will shout out to the end with her taking down Seth. That was pretty badass.
Epic. That's pretty epic. Favorite LOL?
So I really, really liked it when Elagast was talking with Beric about his stuffed bread and the things that he was making, and he gets Elagast to try it. And I just heard Monica Geller's voice in my head going, it's good. And that just gave me a laugh.
Did you have a cry?
I didn't have a cry, but it really made me feel things when Skedi and Inara's relationship was
tanking
and feeling really toxic because of the pain that they both held and felt with that. So I didn't cry, but I didn't feel very good.
Okay. Date, marry, kill. Kissin, Elagast, Aaron.
I hardcore agree with what you said. I don't think there's another way for me to arrange that order. So I would marry Kissin, date Aaron, and kill Elagast because I just can't.
And what's done is done now.
What's done is done. Keep it short and sweet.
So that is a wrap on God Killer by Hannah Kaner.
What a journey. What an actual journey.
Fantasy journey.
Gods,
it was.
Shadow demons, legs. We didn't even talk about Legs the horse. Who has more legs than Kissin? If Kissin had both of her legs, which I thought was silly.
Horses will always have more legs than people.
She's like, it's kind of like a private joke between us. And I'm like, but four legs. Four legs. Compare a horse to any person, still gonna have more legs.
Still gonna have more legs. But fair enough. If it makes you laugh, happy,
then great. Go great. With it.
Great. We all need some more laughter in our life. So, by very popular demand, we are going to be continuing with the next Bridgerton book,
The Viscount Who Loved Me by Julia Quinn.
And because we had a lot of interest, I'm going to not use the word demands, but a lot of interest.
We don't yield to demands.
We don't. But we had a lot of people reach out to us saying that they love this Bridgerton series. They want us to move forward. And I think for now, we're just going to be taking that one by one. We definitely want to be reading other books along the way. But I am very excited to get into Antony and Kate's story because, you know, I love Jonathan Bailey and Simone Ashley in the Bridgerton series on Netflix. And, you know, I'm freaking feral for the third season that is coming out tomorrow.
Oh my gosh, it is coming out tomorrow.
Tomorrow of when this comes out for you guys.
Oh my gosh, May is going by so quickly. That is the best news I've heard all day, that it's just tomorrow.
It's just tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. I am so excited for this new season. And I'm so excited, honestly, that there has been the interest in continuing the book series, because I personally would like to continue reading it. So it'll be really nice to do at least, we'll kind of go book by book, like you said, on the podcast. And at least get to the next one, because we love Antony. We love Kate. And I'm so excited to see their story in the original context of how they were written.
On the page.
So I'm really looking forward to that. So make sure that if you guys would like to come along with us on this journey, if you haven't already read it, go get your copy and come back here in 2 weeks' time.
And in the meantime, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. That way you can get notifications on when we post new episodes. It also just helps us be seen and grow our community and share in all the joy and love we have for reading books written by women about women. And also, for those of you that are the Sarah J. Maas fans, we have our full SJM collection up on Patreon. You can access the link in the show notes. Go binge all 31 episodes. Do an episode a day. Done in a month.
I mean, we have a lot of fun stuff in our show notes right now. We have a trip to Scotland. We have the whole SJM read. It's a good time there. So go check it out.
It's a great time to be in our show notes. So check that out and meet us back here in 2 weeks as we dive into the Regency world of The Viscount Who Loved Me by Julia Quinn.
So until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.